Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Sharp and hot with Chef Family.
Sharp and hot with Chef Family.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode number 81. 81.
Holler back.
Welcome, Anne, producer Anne, to the studio. How are you, Anne?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm really good. I got to the studio, and there's a package for me.
I saw.
I'm very excited. So, you listeners, if you are out there cooking things, if you photograph them and use the hashtag Sharp and Hot on Instagram, I will turn around and send you books from my collection, because people send me lots and lots of books.
Mm-hmm.
There are some books that I'm super, super excited about, like our guest who is going to be on after the break. My dear friend Andrea Lynn has written a book called Queens, A Culinary Passport. That one I'm not parting with. Although she said I might be able to squeeze another one out of her agent,
Okay, cool.
Of her publisher. So I'm happy to like turn around books that I'm never going to use, like anything that has to do with nuts, even if I love it and we have the person on the show,
right.
You know, nut-free house, anything having to do with like why gluten and warming food is bad, never going to cook out of, I will happily send those away to people. But this is exciting because it's a game, and I'm going to open the package on because I don't really know what to expect. Someone tweeted me and was like, I wanted a game about food, so I made it. And it was like, that's so Gandhi of you. Be the change you want to see in the gaming world.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, I didn't know that.
So it's like a little pizza box. I have no idea what to expect here. It says Chef Emily.
It does look like a pizza box.
Let's see. That's a cool card. Dish It Out Foodie. Hey, Chef Emily, we're very excited you found out about our board game. I did because you tweeted me. Thank you so much for doing that. Your feedback is welcome, and we're eager for you to play the game. So excited.
All right.
All right.
Cool.
So it's like a little pizza box. We're not going to play it right now because we don't really have enough time.
Okay.
But I'm going to see what happens here.
So who is this now?
There's a cover. Okay.
Dish It Out Foodie.
Oh,
folks
in
Oh, that's funny. It really does look like a pizza box,
like a
and it says Dish It Out To Go.
Oh, this is so cool. Oh, okay. This is going to be fun.
Oh, there's lots of pieces.
Lots of pieces. Like, there's a little popcorn bag. There's a peanut bag, which I assume doesn't have real peanuts in it. Nope. Dice and game pieces. Cards. Okay. Super cute. Thank you so much. I will play it. Maybe this weekend we'll have friends over and we'll play.
Cool.
And then I will give you some feedback, and I'll be honest.
All right.
I appreciate it. Anybody who wants to send me stuff, you can absolutely do that. You can mail it to me at the Heritage Radio Station. 1130 Bedford Avenue, Box 301. And
there
it'll eventually make its way to me. So, meanwhile, this weekend, I played God, which was really fun. I had my husband take a picture because it's very, I start a lot of things from seed because I don't really have to. I've realized like the growing season is long enough, with the exception of like tomatoes and peppers that really need a couple of extra weeks under grow lights. Everything else, kale, squash, things like that will just come right up. But like in February when the seed catalogs come, I'm so excited for the winter beyond. Then March comes and I'm like, that's practically spring. So I'll start things under the grow lights. And the way that I do it is I have like a seed tray, but just the bottom part. So it's just like a big open rectangle, the little compartments.
Gotcha.
Fill it with like an inch of soil, sprinkle the seeds on. And then those things will sprout. And then you go through with like a toothpick and pick out the strong ones and replant, pot them up.
Right.
It's called into the little compartment things. And it is like seriously playing God, because you're like, only the strong survive.
You live, you die.
Exactly. And I'm like,
you're not making it, kids.
And there's part of me that like feels badly about
that. Do you like start to be like, I'm sorry.
I'm like, what do I do?
Maybe next year.
I'm growing yellow alpine strawberries that I am really, really excited about. So alpine strawberries don't get bigger than an inch, and they are designed by Mother Nature to grow in like the craggy cliffs of Germany. Like they're sturdy, sturdy plants.
Cool.
So I seeded them, and there were like 250 seeds in the seed pack. I only need like 10, and I'll give away a whole bunch. But the soil, potting soil is expensive, and it's a lot of time, and it's a lot of watering. So I potted up 50. So I still have 200 little, like everybody sprouted. So I just kind of picked them up like a mat, because the roots under the soil, and I just laid them on the side of my garden by the well. And I'm like, Let's see what happens.
All right.
We'll see what happens. So I'll keep you posted on that project.
Yeah.
But growing, I mean, it will never fail to boggle my mind that you can plant a seed.
Yeah.
And then a plant comes out of it.
It is fascinating.
And then it makes strawberries.
Like, to geek out on that. It's like, it's so cool.
I don't smoke weed, but if I did,
I would pontificate about that.
Oh my god, I could see just being like, I can't. I can't believe that. I mean, I can get that sensation completely just high on sugar because my students made five types of pies this morning. So I had five slices of pie so far today.
Nice.
So the other piece of news that came out this weekend is that the Kraft Macaroni and Cheese Company is changing their formula. So this is noteworthy to me because Kraft mac and cheese is the blue box that food writers, people who make fun of bad food, always use as the like iconic crap in a box. I loved it because Susie Bradnick's mom cooked it, and that's what normal people ate. Unlike at my house where my dad was slaughtering chickens right before dinner, which was like crazy.
Right, okay.
So I would ride my bike down to Susie's house where her mom made macaroni and cheese out of a box like normal people. Kraft, citing public pressure.
Okay.
In a Facebook, I know I'm so cynical about this story, a Facebook petition of like 360,000 signatures pressuring them to take the artificial coloring out.
Okay.
And rely on natural coloring. So
I feel like that's cool. But I feel I'm always like, all right, like they're like preemptively, you know, Kraft is like, we're going to change this recipe. It's like, that's more PR to me than making like a real change to your recipe, making it, you know, more
sustainable,
less chemical. And stuff
like that. Know a lot of things are happening at Kraft to make this happen.
Right.
I do not believe for one second that mission number one is to keep you healthier.
No.
It's like, it's just not. That's not how corporations operate. And it's not how they have to operate. It's up to the consumer to decide what they're going to eat. But this like PR spin of like, we are going to be healthy.
But, you know, while you're, I 100% agree with you, but I do think it's cool that we've come to a point where there is consumer pressure that actually is reaching the top. And maybe it's not making the biggest changes, but it's getting like just a touch of fanfare here and there. And I don't know. It's an interesting time we're in right now, I guess.
So last week, Gwyneth Paltrow took a lot of heat for doing the SNAP diet. Did you hear about this?
Gwyneth.
So my first reaction was like, oh, you tone deaf, privileged lady. You are so stepping in it again. And like, I find that she steps in it all the time. And then I read an article that was like, hey, look, middle-aged, wealthy white ladies, by and large, are getting goop. And if it makes those middle-aged white ladies pause for just a second when they're reaching for their limes at Whole Foods, then mission accomplished. And I was like, I kind of came around on that one. I was like, you know,
it's true. It's like we want to hate. People really hate on Gwyneth Paltrow. I don't really share.
Like her.
She doesn't really bother me one way or the other. But yeah, I mean, it's not like the biggest change or the biggest, like, it's not like kudos to you, but it is kind of like, all right, like, at least you're saying something.
At least you're doing something, and at least it's, you know, not. I heard a really great interview with Mark Ronson, who took down the, he said it was the worst PR, like, bungle ever when Jay-Z and all of the, like, super, super wealthy musicians did the like release of Jay-Z's record music sharing service, which is called Tidal.
Okay.
And Mark Ronson was like, you know, everyone who's standing there is not being adversely affected by Spotify and iTunes. These people, Beyonce, Kanye West, whoever else was standing up there, they're going to be just fine. And it came across as like, by using this other service, we're going to be able to get that other private jet, where what they could have done and maybe should have done is shown, you know, people making music in their basements who are now going to be able to like pay the rent because they're getting this like fair wage for music.
Right.
And I feel like when Paltrow kind of steps in the same way, it's like, yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of critique was like, well, if you had just took 1% of your salary and mailed it to, and it's like, that's not realistic. Right. That's not fair. We cannot, you know, I would never want to be punished for being successful, and I will call out anyone who says they don't want to be rich. Of course, we're Americans. Like, you may be altruistic and you may support a lot of charities, but just because you achieve a certain level of success, I don't think that means like, okay, now you get to give, you know, you get to solve world hunger or even Manhattan hunger on your own back. Like, I think it's like, that's a really bad
I think that's a huge conversation. I think that's a really big, complicated.
Right. So back to the craft.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mac and cheese. I don't think it's a coincidence that they have chosen to change the formula and PR out of that, spin out of that, the blue box macaroni and cheese, because people like you and me and our guest who's going to come on point to that as food people as an icon of like crap in a box. So they could have chosen anything. Their craft. They could have chosen, you know, their Velveeta
products.
Very
true. Very true.
But this is the one they're going after. Yeah, yeah. And that's where my cynical, like, kind of like turned the screw a little bit. Okay. So that's my piece on mac and cheese. I want to talk briefly about our Kickstarter project that we're doing.
Yeah, very cool.
Today is 4/22, April 22nd. If you're listening to this on a podcast, it may be April 22nd, 2017. I have no idea when. I don't know when you get around to it. But we're trying to reach $20,000 today. Today. Actually, today. April 22nd.
It's April 21st.
We have a whole extra day? Oh, yeah. Jack's laughing at me. We have a whole extra day.
I was like, do I go with this? I was like, wait, no, I should say that.
Yeah,
I
no, you should totally say
I'm sorry.
Where did yesterday
go? Let's just go with today. We need it today.
We need it today.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this in real time or tomorrow.
Yeah, there you go.
If you go to Kickstarter, we are the front page featured project.
Yeah.
And we are collecting fun backers who love what we do and want us to have a better retail space for our website, which is our storefront to the world, which the reality is in 2015, the code that it's built on will be obsolete and it will just cease to exist.
Yeah.
So it would be like trying to log on to a bulletin board system. I'm really dating myself.
Yeah, it's all right.
I feel like trying to log in your MySpace at this point. Like, it might still be there. It's a clunky thing, but like, no, I think BBS is a better,
right,
like,
right.
Man, I was on a BBS when I was in high school. My parents had no idea what I was doing. None. And I like had all of these friends in this imaginary world. And I remember the day that it went from you could write just in, it was like a black screen with a C prompt that you like sign in and it would be just black and white type. Or then the day came when you could change the color of your writing and like identify yourself. And like my dad built commercial nets. So he bought like one of the very first personal computers to use to like design fishing nets. I had Yahtzee and figured out how to get on the internet. My dad got it on the internet. I don't remember. But I had this whole like alternate life where I would come home from school and log into the BBS and see all of my friends who live maybe a town away.
All right.
But it like changed my outlook on life. Like there are so many people who are not in my high school. Those people are assholes. There's nice people out there. And now we can change our writing color.
And all is right in the world.
All is right in the world. So the heritageradionetwork.com site, as you see it, is going to go the way of the BBS system in 2015. So we set this goal to raise $20,000 by tomorrow.
Yes.
Not today. But if you're listening, go on Kickstarter right now and just do it, because as of 2:00 today, we are like less than $2,000 away from the goal. We're like $1,300 and change away from the goal, which is just a handful of $50 contributions. Yeah. I backed it at $55. I'm getting an exclusive t-shirt. I'm super excited. So if you haven't done it already, whatever, if it's $5, you can kick in. If it's $500, you can kick in. Like any good public radio listener, you get a chunk of the responsibility because you get the lion's share of the programming. And we are super, super grateful that you are out there. Did I mention Listener Knitmaster?
No.
Listener Knitmaster is getting a book because she... Do you remember a couple of weeks ago I thought that spam had gotten so sophisticated that Instagram would post a food picture with someone who didn't have any followers and wasn't following anybody
but
me?
Yes, yes, yes.
She's a real person.
Okay.
She emailed me and was like, I'm a real person.
Amazing.
She still doesn't have
way
any
to follow
followers.
Up.
She still hasn't posted any other picture, but she has this beautiful picture of, I think I said roasted chicken. I meant tortellini and vegetable soup.
Uh-huh.
Because I commented on the picture. I was like, if you're real, email me your address. And she was like, I'm real.
Amazing.
So that hashtag is alive and working. And I am absolutely tickled that people are using it. I just love to see what you're doing. I made tamales all weekend. I figured out how to do like a little animation on Instagram. So you could see the steps that I took in the tamale making process.
Yeah, those are very cool that you're doing. I like that a lot.
I'll tell you. We're going to talk about masa after the break because I never want to see another tamale. I never want to make another. I will eat tamales, but I'll tell you, it was a job.
Trying and tribulations.
After the break, we're going to come back with Andrea Lynn, author of Queens, A Culinary Journey.
And this one's the instrumental to Kami Mami, which is produced by Nair, performed by Nani Castle, Full Service Family. This is HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza, where two women outside the window just noticed we are doing a live broadcast. I miss them being totally excited, but then I held up the postcard with the logo and information of the show, and then they looked at me like,
they're like, we just only wanted to be aware, so we don't want
to, like, I'm just trying to have my cappuccino and be left alone.
No, I'm sure they were right. I like when they were looking in before, though, and they didn't think that we could see them. That was like while we were talking. I was like, hey.
Yeah, so my people want to come here with me occasionally. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, they're like, do I like sit in the studio? I'm like, well, we have chairs, but like you could sit literally right outside the window and also eat at the same
time. And eat and have a beer, yeah.
Okay, so Andrea Lynn. Good friend of mine. We go back a long time. I don't even want to calculate how many years ago it was that we were roommates at the Greenbrier Hotel for the Symposium for Professional Food Writers. Welcome to Sharp and Hot.
Thank you so much for having me.
So in that interim, you have succeeded in something that I have utterly failed at, which is publishing a book. So congratulations. I'm getting there. One foot in front of the other. We're going to get there. So I'm super excited about this book because I don't know anything about, I had not had any exposure to Queens except that my grandfather and grandmother lived in Far Rockaway, mm-hmm. which was not, we did not go there for culinary reasons. We always had a roasted leg of lamb and then went to the beach. That was the only thing that brought me to Queens. Since I've been teaching at NYU, there's a class that I teach, and this is my first time through, and so I kind of have buddied up with someone who's taught it in the past, and we went to Queens to Jade Asian Restaurant, which appears in Queens, a culinary passport.
Wow, yeah.
Which was really, really fun. But completely coincidentally to you coming on the show today, I went to the okay, so you have to tell me how to say this too.
I am a horrible at pronunciations. Tortilla nixtamale.
So I know the second word is nixtamal.
Nixtamal. I butcher everything.
But so. I don't know the first one. Tortillaria?
Tortillaria.
This is not great radio. Can I call out three white
girls? I'm from Queens.
Right? This
guys, is your thing. I'm from Queens. I feel like I should know all of
this. This is your thing.
Pronunciation was never my strong suit. So I just always am like, sorry.
You're like food. Yeah. So Tortilleria Nixtamal is in Corona, Queens. And it's one of the only places in New York City where you can buy fresh, authentic masa, right?
Yes.
So how... Tell me about the process of making this book. How did you, like, that seems like an obvious one to include because it's so unique. It's filled with places to go all over the borough. What was sort of your process? Because reading through it, it seems very overwhelming. Like, I don't know how you did it.
It was a tad overwhelming. I tried to do one of the things that we had decided was everything had to be very mostly subway accessible. Mm-hmm. And there's so much with there's more past this, but everything is basically like a 10 to 15 minute walk at most from the subway. And then from there, I just broke it down into certain areas like Astoria, Corona, Elmhurst, and then just picked certain restaurants to profile. And a lot of them are, some of them are my favorite, and some of them are just, they're also, you know, who agreed to be profiled, who agreed to give recipes. And then, you know, I have like walking tours, which are a little smaller. You can spend a day somewhere and just kind of wander around. So it was just more meant to be kind of a culinary showcase of Queens. Because I think also, I have a horrible sense of direction. And the way that everything is kind of laid out in Queens, there's like a 71st Street, 71st
Avenue, that, 71st Avenue, Road, and they're all next to each other.
Things like that are just very overwhelming. So I have like some maps in there and then directions from the subway to kind of, and then also when you're at the restaurants, things to order. Because I think things like that tend to be very overwhelming when you're trying to try a new cuisine.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I had no idea what to expect from the Nixta Mall. I thought I was going to like a single story warehouse district.
Right.
And it's a beautiful, adorable restaurant on a residential street. And you can smell it from like a mile away. I mean, and it was so good.
Do all the tortillas at night in that right there.
And it's amazing because most places are using Maseca, which is like what Bisquick is to true, you know, pancake batter or baking, you know, and they're like using the lime and grinding the corn right there. How much of this book was cold calling chefs like or restaurant owners out of the blue? Or are these mostly people that you knew?
No. It was a lot of cold calling. And I mean, you know how chefs are. A lot of the cold calling didn't work. Mm. Sometimes I would have to drop in.
I don't know if I could do that.
Which I felt horrible about, but it was almost easier than chasing them. I had like a Thai restaurant in Elmhurst, which is amazing, and I wanted a recipe so badly from them, and I almost got to the point where I was stalking. I mean, I called and I was walking by doing research, and I saw the owner smoking outside the restaurant, and so I had called. I had like an intern who helped me call because it was just too much to call, so I felt a little weird, but I went up to her on the street while she's smoking, and I was like, hi, you know, I've been leaving messages, and she's like, oh yes, we can get you recipes, da da da, opened up her calendar, like, come back on this day.
Yeah.
I called the day before to confirm. The woman was in Thailand. I mean, she knew she wasn't going to be there, but instead, I had cornered her, you know, instead of just saying, like, no. She made it for when she was in Thailand.
So did you ever get anything out of her?
No. I mean, at that point, I had pestered them for like 4 months. And that's where you just have to be like, all right, I got to let it go. There's a lot of good Thai food in Elmhurst, and I just have to let this one go.
Right. So they're not included in the book.
No.
So that's what they get.
Yeah. I mean, and you know what? It is a little bit of time on their part. So it's not, you know, I don't hold any... It's fine if people don't want to participate, but
she could.
But maybe just say no.
Right. I feel like I'm walking that line with a friend of a friend who may or may not listen to the show, but has a very specific job at a very specific food-focused television show, and he was like, you should totally come by. Mm-hmm. And I'm walking that line of, like, how much can I pester this person, and was he just being nice?
Yeah.
Was he just being nice? I'm taking it at face value, and come visit means come visit. We'll see. Last I heard, he was like, I'm going on vacation. I'll call you when I get back. I was like, okay. Aww. I just got the smackdown.
There's a line,
So the other place that I recently went is to Flushing, Queens, which is like a different country.
Yes,
you get
amazing.
Off that 7 train, and and you have worked on Flushing Avenue. Yeah. It is like you have walked into China.
Yeah, I find it. You definitely don't feel like you're in the United States anymore, and it's amazing to just go take the 7 train and to have that experience. So close.
I could not believe it. On that day, I went to Flushing, and then I came straight here, and I was like, I can't believe that, like, on the MTA, on my 275, I can get between these two places so easily.
Did you ever go to the Golden Shopping Mall? I have that.
I don't know.
I
don't know.
Well, I can take you, because you're, like, going down it's a little hard to find.
Okay.
And you're going down the stairs, and there are all these stalls.
No, I was not there.
It's like something like that, you really feel like, you're like, wow, where am I?
Where are we? So we did go to Jade Asian Restaurant, and you, in your profile of the restaurant, you give, like, a little how to navigate dim sum, which is great, because even as someone who considers herself a pretty seasoned dim sum eater, I'm still kind of a newbie. When you go with someone who really knows how to do it, it's like, oh, I thought, okay, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So you say you can get out of your chair and go hunt down the cart that you want.
I do it, yeah. And I've never had anybody say, yeah, it's, you know what, it is a little bit of a game. You have to go, if you see something you want, just get up and get it. You know, bring your little ticket so they can mark it off. Also, like, don't ever wait for dessert. Like, if you see it, grab it, because that will not come again.
That was a revelation also, because yeah. That's happened, because they usually bring the dessert cart first, I've noticed.
I know, it's so weird. It's never at the end.
And I then, wonder if they're testing you.
If it's a test,
if you know to grab the dessert while it's there, then you get the chicken feet brought by and not just all the shrimp, you know, steamed shrimp shumai.
Yeah, but I had been going to Chinatown for dim sum for a long time, mm-hmm. and I think Flushing just has much more of a variety of things that they offer. Mm-hmm. So,
and I think going with a big group of people is way more fun.
Yes.
My husband and I went, just the two of us, once, right after James was born, mm-hmm. and Grandma and Grandpa kept James at home so that we could have, like, a quick daytime date to try being away from the baby. Right. And we got so stuffed so
quickly.
Yeah,
there's only so much you can eat. Yeah.
And then they, like, emasculated my husband. Like, everyone who walked by when he would offer, we were like, no, we're done. They would be like, they were like, made fun of him for not eating enough, was like not being manly enough to like handle their dim sum.
Well, I went with a group, and I think there's always something that somebody else, like, you might not like everything, but mm-hmm. somebody else likes, you know, everything got eaten.
And I will say this, last time I had the chicken feet, I did it, and it was awesome. I was so angry at myself for not trying it. It was like,
I did the chicken feed. I was like, okay, I've done it.
I really liked it. I thought it was
I have this in the book. They had somebody showed me how to eat the head-on shrimp fried, mm-hmm. and so you have to, like, put it in your mouth and, like, the whole thing, and then kind of pull it out, so you get
like an edamame, like you would with an edamame.
Yes, that's a great way to describe mm-hmm. it. So you get the kind of like the fried essence that you can taste it mm-hmm. from the shell, but you're like pulling the shrimp out. Yeah. So I had no idea that's how you were supposed to eat it.
Nope, I've been picking those shells off.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Okay, so where should I go on my next adventure? Where would you send me?
Okay, I would do... there's a place in Elmhurst that I profiled, Joju Modern Vietnamese Sandwiches.
Oh, yes.
And I like to start... This is like kind of an appetizer, but they have... banh mi fries and kimchi fries, and they are divine.
So, like, chili cheese fries, but instead of chili and cheese, it's like banh mi topping?
And you can get an egg on it if you want. But so, it's like, I mean, the kimchi one has kimchi and, like, some kind of, I think, like a sriracha-ish sauce. And then the banh mi one has all those fresh pickled vegetables that you get on a banh mi. And, like, that Peruvian green sauce they mm-hmm. have, which is so good. They have it. So I do that as, like, a, you know, a starter. Their banh mis are great, too, but you're going to eat.
Fries.
Yeah.
Right,
oh,
right,
no,
right,
so
right.
good. And then there's a place called Chow Thai in Elmhurst, right around the corner. And everything that I've had has been... divine.
Awesome.
So I like get Thai food there. And then for dessert, there's Plant Love House, and they have this like sizzling brownie. It's on a sizzling plate, and then it's condensed milk that they pour, and I think caramel, and it's beautiful. It like steams, and it's gorgeous, and it tastes so good. And their desserts are amazing.
I am so excited, and I'm like, my stomach is growling.
I know, yeah.
I'm really excited. Can I call you when we're going to go? Will
yes.
you come meet us? And will you come back to you from Queen?
Yeah, I feel like I'm like so excited about this book, because I think also like when I worked down at Main Street, like it's such a confusing place, and if you don't have, like, I had... kids that like worked with me, and they would go out and get lunch, and it was amazing, but I never knew where to go back and get anything. So this book is like so cool.
The book is great because it is like it's like, here's how to fit in, here's what to order, here's how to not feel like you don't belong here. And I think that's really important, because even the most adventurous person, like, I don't think I could ever do what you did and just like cold call chefs. I'd be like,
oh no, yeah. Or stalk them on the.
I tried to do advertising sales for a magazine for a very short period of time, and it was horrifying. I just couldn't walk in and like ask people for information, which was terrible. Andrea, I'm so happy that you came. What are you working on a Queen's Culinary Passport, like, driver's ed version?
Like you can do all the cars? I should. No. It was so much work. So
yeah, take a breather. Everyone go out and purchase the book. It is absolutely beautiful, full of maps and color photographs and how to be a really amazing eater right here in New York City. And next week on the show,
we have Andy and Ashley from Presentation Party Night.
Who listeners may remember was the debate party that I took part in at the Brooklyn Brewery, where it was vegans versus omnivores.
Right.
And Andy, who will be on the show, and I did not see eye to eye. So it's going to be a very exciting I don't know, rehashing? Maybe
sure.
Not. Maybe we'll
I'll hold him back.
Put it all to bed. Maybe he'll come back and say, you know what, you're right. I've started eating meat. Otherwise, keep using that sharp and hot hashtag on Instagram. Go to Kickstarter.com. Become a backer of Heritage Radio Network. We literally can't make this programming without you and absolutely adore your support. I have my homework, which is to play Dish It Out Foodie. And spend the week eating my 150 tamales that are in the refrigerator.
All right.
Until next week, everybody, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.